The job of the blender is to combine these elements in such a way as to produce an overall flavour.
A wider repertoire of different beverages than ever before.
I think one of the most interesting breweries, and certainly one of the most interesting origin stories for a brewery in Australia.
Single malts, blends, grain whiskies, bourbons and more.
If you want mezcal to be sold around the world, then unfortunately you're going to have to make a compromise.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. How many Australian gins would you guess are currently on the market? In early 2021, the gin queen, Caroline Ashford, counted 600 of them, and that wasn't even including limited editions and seasonal releases. Caroline is back with us again on the Drinks Adventures podcast to share with you her top 10 Australian gins of the year. First up, though, Caroline reveals her tally of Australian gins available year-round as at January 2022, and it's a pretty crazy number once again.
As of today, I'm still updating it last night, it's about 920-something. It's astonishing to me that given, obviously, what everyone's been going through, that our Australian gin distillers are still busy creating. So it's fantastic to see.
Absolutely. And, you know, how do you count what gins are included in the list? Because you mentioned before that this doesn't even include limited editions.
Yeah, I try not to include limited editions because we all know the frustration of seeing something fantastic and then going to buy it and it being sold out. So that's the only reason. As soon as a gin becomes part of the core range, then it goes on there. So it's very basic research and going on to every single website and checking. So I started this. This was my pandemic project when we thought the pandemic would only last a few months. So I started this in 2020. It's a painstaking labor of love. But it's great for me because I really get to see a complete overview of the scene.
And of course, what happens is then when you go and post it online, you'll get people saying, "Why haven't you included us? And why haven't you included this one?" And it just keeps going up, doesn't it?
Well, because I've been doing it, I think I started doing this in 2016. So there's quite a backlog. And I have been really consistent about not including limited editions. So over time, people are more aware. I used to, get questions about, why I haven't included a certain gin. And now people know that it's probably because it was released in 2019 or 2018. So, It's much easier. People are more, just sort of more in tune with what I'm doing. And it's really nice to see that people, it resonates that people say, "Oh yes, I definitely love this gin," or, using it as a shopping list. That's the other reason why I don't include limited editions. They go off and they'll shop from it. So, that's really great for me because it shows that what I do has value to the consumer, but also has value to the distillers themselves.
And just on the 920, was it 923? Is that what we've sold?
Yeah, today.
Yeah. And so does that include like gins that are, annual release, short release, like sort of Four Pillars Bloody Shiraz, for example?
Bloody Shiraz, yes, now, because it is available all year round.
Yep.
So that's really the sort of, benchmark, really. If it's something that is very seasonal, so, a particular distiller might have a mandarin gin in stock for, a month or two, and then it goes until next year, then I don't put that in. But who knows, maybe next year I'll include my favourite limited editions of the year or something.
Well, let's talk about the top 10, but before we do, were there any kind of overarching trends or any styles of gin that you think kind of defined 2021?
Not really. I mean, I've picked sort of, not random things to me because I liked all of these. I actually do start making a list in January. So, things will pop up throughout the year. I have an ongoing list. So as soon as something comes through and I think, this is really good, it goes on the list, and then kind of come the end of November, I go back and, you know, have a look and thin it down, or you know, add more things in. I don't think that there is an overarching theme, except I think for Oyster Shell, which was obviously my number one gin from North of Eden Distillery. But as you'll remember, Never Never Distilling also released an Oyster Shell gin in collaboration with Melbourne Restaurant Society. And that is a limited edition that I believe is going into the core range next year. And also, I believe St. Felix Distillery in Melbourne also produced a kind of oyster shell gin in collaboration with a very new bar in Melbourne called Pearl Diver, which is an oyster sort of bar with cocktails and, you know, and champagne and everything else. So I think that kind of ingredient was really interesting this year. So I'm interested to see whether other distillers kind of move into that area. I think it was, you know, very innovative and very clever. And very delicious ingredient to use. So I'm constantly amazed at the types of ingredients that I'm seeing popping up. You know, Darling Distillery use freshly churned butter. You know, I think that's what I find exciting, is that Australian distillers are always innovating. So those are the things that kind of catch my eye. But bottom line is, it has to taste delicious.
Absolutely. Well, maybe since we've just mentioned it, it is your gin of the year 2021, the North of Eden Oyster Shell Gin. How do the oyster shells transpire in this gin?
Well, I spoke to Gavin recently because I wanted to, Gavin's the distiller there, and I'm really pleased for them that this is this came out as the number one, because they've had a really kind of more of a rough trot than anybody. You know, they were they battled the bushfires on all four fronts around them, and then the pandemic hit, so they hadn't been open for very long. So this is something very new from them. Although I urge you to go and check out their other gins, particularly the Admiral, which is their Navy Strength gin. Gavin said that initially he crushed the oyster shells down. So they do actually go into the pot of the still with the alcohol and the other ingredients. So it's not a flavour that's added afterwards. The gin isn't steeped in with oyster shells. It's actually a botanical that's distilled. And also, you know, quite a nice way to use something that is essentially a waste product, really.
Yeah, and I had Sean Baxter on the show late last year from Never Never Distilling, and he was talking about the oyster shells bringing kind of a minerally quality to the gin. Is that kind of...
Yeah, I think, you know, as Gavin said, it's the carbonates and the calciums that's absolutely beautiful in a martini. I think it depends what else is going in there. I know Never Never used Geraldton wax. In this instance, Gavin's used saltbush. Native saltbush, again, which kind of ties in with that sort of almost marine sort of quality. But I think what was appealing to me, that was obviously very fresh, very bright, lots of minerality, but the finish is almost creamy, which kind of almost ties in with when you eat an oyster, there is that sort of creaminess on the finish. So it ticks all the boxes for me. And it's got lots of juniper in it, which you know how much I love.
And, of course, it's a nice sort of regional statement as well, because, you know, some of the best oysters in New South Wales come from that area of the New South Wales coast.
Yeah, and so, again, it's got that real sense of place, and it's using local ingredients, which really is what Australian gins are all about.
Now, reading through the list, I was, again, just feeling like I'm a little bit behind the hottest trends in gin and the newest distilleries, because there were quite a few names that I'd say maybe half of them that I hadn't heard of before. So
yeah, I'd say half the list is six maybe are brand new distilleries, which, you know, as I said earlier, you know, it's really exciting and nerve-wracking because, you know, these distillers you know, have opened during a pandemic. So Nort Gin, I started talking to Chris February 2020, you know, and he's all sort of set to open his venue. And then obviously the pandemic hit. Amber Chez, which is in WA, again, would have sort of struggled. But it's very interesting. I think the ones that have opened venues, it's been trying with lockdowns in Melbourne. But yeah, some very exciting distilleries.
Amber Chez Botanical Gin from WA, where are they based? Is it Perth?
Yes.
And tell me about that gin.
Yeah, so I spoke to Alicia. So she was actually based in London. and came back just before the pandemic, and they decided to set up this distillery. So she's a very young distiller, and obviously it's great to see more women in the scene. And I was really impressed with this because, as you know, I have a love-hate relationship with flavoured gins, which we'll talk about in a minute because there's another one on here. So it's very hit and miss. We're obviously very used to seeing the big trend, which is pink gins and flavoured gins and, you know, gins that have got wine in them. And it's really difficult to capture an essence of flavour without completely dominating the gin itself. I'm looking for something that's still very juniper forward, and has incorporated those, you know, flavoursome additional botanicals without sort of ruining that. And so they've used a hint of elderflower, and it really is genuinely a hint. But I also liked the fresh notes of Granny Smith apples. And so it's really bright and fresh, and it's not overwhelming with those flavours. You taste it and it's still definitely a gin, and it's just lovely.
Now, you mentioned Nort before. Is this the only distillery that's been in the list 2 years in a row?
So the other one is Alpine Gin from Applewood Distillery. They had two. They're the first gin distillery to have two gins on the same list, which they did last year for Coral Gin and their Navy Strength. So you do tend to see some consistency. So Adelaide Hills Distillery, you know, again, very innovative. You know, they generally have appeared routinely, but it's not a given that things come through that I think, oh, you know, that's fantastic. You know, just if I've liked something before. So, and similarly, there are gins that, you know, never make the list and suddenly, you know, they do. So I try and be as subjective as possible. And like I say, I collect, you know, I create my list starts in January. And, you know, so it's not just a flurry in November going, oh God, what came out this year? It's genuinely kind of, you know, I keep on top of it throughout the year and then go back and refine the list. And some things that were on the list at the beginning of the year, you know, may have been, you know, replaced by something else or dropped off the list. It's quite hard doing just 10.
Yeah,
setting myself a target of just doing 10 when you've got, you know, 900 and something gins. And there are so many new gins coming out. I mean, I've just updated the directory, as you said. I'm updating the distillery map as we speak. And I've got emails from people saying we're not quite ready to go, but we're launching in a month or two. So it's not slowing down. There are definitely more distilleries coming.
Now, it's Nort Overproof Gin that's on the list this year. Tell me about that one, but also, you know, what do you think makes a good overproof gin? Is this an overproof or, I suppose, Navy Strength?
It's their equivalent of a Navy Strength, so it's 57.4%. Everyone knows that I'm obsessed with overproof gins, not because I'm a raging alcoholic, but just because of the, you know, as you know yourself, the higher the proof of the gin, the more of those beautiful botanical flavours. It's just more flavoursome. So a lot of people are scared about Navy Strength gin and sort of, oh God, it's, you know, it's 57.4, you know, I need to watch my intake. And I'm trying to educate people saying, actually, what it means is you can actually use less. So, you know, whereas you might use, you know, a 30 mil of a regular gin in your G&T, you can actually, you know, probably get away with, you know, 15 mil. So it's not as scary. You're just getting more flavour. And that's why I love Navy Strength gins. It's very easy for me to spot a really good Navy Strength gin because, you know, I taste everything neat, first of all. And I should be able to sip that without sort of feeling like my mouth's on fire. It should still be really smooth. A lot of these gins are marketed as sipping gins now, so literally as if you're drinking whiskey, so literally just over ice. So, yeah, that's why I love Navy Strengths, and I really like what Chris Cameron's done here because the original Nort gin that was on the list last year was kind of orange and quite spice-driven, quite earthy, whereas this is kind of beautiful. It's got lots of zesty pink grapefruit, you know, fresh apple again, and then you've got macadamia nut, which is beautiful, soft mouthfeel. So it's quite different. It's not just a case of, which some distillers do, and that's absolutely fine, of just taking their main gin and just not diluting it as much. This is actually a whole new recipe, which I, you know, I really appreciate.
Next up is Seaborne Distillery from Queensland, another name that was new to me, with Coastal Dry Gin.
Yes. The distiller, Tiago Lopez, actually cut his teeth at Manly Spirits alongside Tim Stone. He's a Brazilian. He's got an engineering background, but obviously worked closely alongside Tim at Manly. And so, when they opened a new distillery in Noosa, he moved up there to create this gin. And again, it's very much got a sense of place. They've really tried to capture tropical Noosa in a bottle. And I think they've done that really well. And I really like the bottle that they've used. It really kind of reflects the story that they're trying to tell.
Another new name, Bright Night Gin in Tasmania, but you say in your write-up that it's Damien Mackie who set up Poltergeist Gin.
You know, you'd anticipate a very good gin from Damien. Poltergeist Unfiltered is the most highly awarded gin from the San Francisco World Spirits Award. I think it's the only gin, as far as I understand, to win a platinum medal, which means you have to win a double gold medal 3 years in a row. So when I realised that he was, when he got in touch and said, I'm setting up a new gin brand, my ears pricked up because I knew it was going to be something special. And he hasn't disappointed here at all. He's really, stayed true to his values. You know, they don't filter it. He's used classic Tasmanian botanicals, and it's all very much about the juniper.
Another new name, and I'm going to guess this is the gin that you mentioned before, that when you heard that Puss and Mew Distillery had created a honey coconut gin, you were thinking, oh, God, this sounds a bit dicey.
I didn't want to hate it, but I was, sort of very sceptical, and I spoke to Deborah, and she reassured me. But even so, you never know until it arrives. I need to sort of rein myself in a bit and sort of say, I need to stop making those assumptions. This was a massive learning curve for me. I have tasted lots and lots of flavored gins, which I really, really don't like, mainly because they end up moving too far away from what I think gin ought to be or what I like about gins, because this is obviously very subjective. So yes, I was anticipating something quite sweet and not very ginny, but this is definitely gin, and everyone I've given some to has just raved about it as much as I have. It's really, really cleverly done. It's not sweet. There's definitely gin in there. So it's not coconut as you would imagine, because obviously as soon as you see coconut, you think Malibu or, cherry ripes and that kind of thing.
Suntan lotion.
Suntan lotion, those very artificial, sweet, sickly sort of elements. But Deb actually toasts the coconut by hand, God bless her. And so what you actually get is kind of toasty nut rather than the sweet coconut that I just mentioned. And they've used honey. And again, not for sweetness. I'm seeing honey kind of pop up quite a lot. And it does, you can taste the hint of honey, but what I'm seeing it used as more is for mouthfeel. So Farmer's Wife use honey. And I think Darling Distillery, which is the other gin on here, use local rooftop honey as well. And it does give that kind of beautiful mouthfeel. So think nutty rather than sweet coconut. And it doesn't detract from the traditional botanicals that they've used. In this instance, the gin is actually steeped in fresh Castlemaine honey. Deborah and Brett have got a family connection to that producer, but it's really, really subtle and it's just delicious. If you liked Paul Tom's Pina Colada limited edition that they did a couple of years ago, then you'll really enjoy this. And I think I've used it I made an old fashioned. But we've experimented. We've actually now stocking it in my other business, the Gymporium, and we've been playing with it quite a lot. And it's actually more versatile than you'd anticipate. So yeah, really, really cleverly done.
Now, freshly churned butter is another ingredient that you don't expect to see in gin, but that's exactly what you'll find in Darling Distillery gin. This is just Darling Distillery gin, their flagship, I guess.
Yeah, they're based in North Melbourne, an old post office. One of the founders, Anil, excuse me, I've forgotten his name, but one of the founders, there's three partners, has actually got a background in the dairy industry. So for him, this was, you know, a no-brainer that he wanted to sort of incorporate his knowledge somehow. And so, yeah, it's again, it's really cleverly done. Lots of orange and mandarin. It's quite herbaceous. But there's also some really lovely elements of rosemary and green tea, which sort of add those herbaceous notes that stop it being too sweet and citrusy. But again, they've used Melbourne rooftop honey and the freshly churned butter. And the combination of those two just give this really beautiful mouthfeel. It's quite intriguing. It won't be for everybody, but it's kind of one of those gins that I've gone back to, you know, regularly throughout the year.
Now, there had to be a pink gin of some kind on the list, surely. And this year it comes from Prohibition Liquor Co. with Moonlight Gin out of South Australia.
Yeah, again, you reserve judgment, but they really knocked it out of the park. It's very interesting in the sense that, you know, it's pink, but there's that none of that sweetness. It's, you know, it's sharp raspberry, bitter grapefruit. They've used, you know, Pink Lady apples. And again, I love apples in gin. Blood limes, goji berries, and then there's hints of sandalwood and clove. So it sounds quite overwhelming, but it's really, really delicious. Those botanicals kind of, you know, work together. They're all cold distilled. So, you know, they're maintaining their fresh flavours, which sometimes can sort of be destroyed when you use a traditional distillation method. But yeah, very dark fruit flavors come through on the palate initially. And then, as I said, you know, you've got sharp grapefruit and the bitter grapefruit and sharp raspberry. And so, yeah, very well done, proving that, you know, you can create a pink gin. It's actually not pink in the bottle. It's really dark, but it turns this very bright, almost fluorescent pink when you add tonic water.
And the last two gins are also from South Australia. So
yes.
Applewood Distillery's Alpine Gin you mentioned, and then Seppeltsfield Road Distillers' Musician's Cut Gin.
Yeah, it's interesting. South Australia always seems to do really well on my list. And I don't know why. I don't go through and kind of go, oh, I have to have two gins from Victoria and I have to have two gins from New South Wales. Both of these distilleries have got, you know, an excellent pedigree. Seppeltsfield Road have kind of relaunched their branding this year, which again, sort of a really bold investment move in the middle of a pandemic. And I went for this one because, again, it's a Navy Strength gin, and I'm an absolute sucker for that. But Nicole Durden, the distiller, again, has showed really, you know, great skill in achieving fantastic integration between the spirit and the botanicals. And again, they've created something different. This is actually to support the Adelaide Symphony Orchestra, which is why it's called Musician's Cut, because Nicole's background is musical. She plays the French horn in the orchestra. So this is a very much a labour of love for her. And again, they've moved away from just releasing a higher proof of a gin that already exists. They've gone and created a whole new recipe. And again, they've gone for those local ingredients. So lots of pink peppercorns, grapefruit, orange, you know, citrus, which is obviously, you know, really well known in South Australia. But then also some interesting botanicals like blue cornflowers, elderflower and chamomile, which are quite, you know, subtle. It's a punchy gin, I won't lie, because it's a Navy Strength, so you get lots of bold juniper, and it's really rich and juicy. That's how I describe it. You know, you kind of almost get that sort of your saliva glands go into overdrive at the back of your, you know, the back of your mouth, and there's a little hint of sweetness from licorice, but it's beautifully balanced. That's what kind of why it stood out for me.
Now, you've been doing this top 10 since 2018. I mean,
no,
do you
it's
think
a bit.
That the...
I was actually looking this morning. I was actually thinking it's actually probably, I think it's probably 2016 because, yeah, I think it's 2016. I've only listed below the article 2017, 2018 onwards. So, yeah, it's been going for a little while.
And do you think the overall quality kind of continues to rise?
Oh, 100%. You only have to look at the amount of international awards that Australian distillers pick up. I mean, Oyster Gin picked up a bronze at the International Wine and Spirits Competition, which is, you know, one of the, you know, probably the premier drinks competition in the world, and it's really, you know, lots and lots of entries from around the world, and, you know, they've performed really well. So definitely the quality is going up. In terms of style, I'm seeing I think I said this to you last year, I'm seeing more nuanced use of Australian native botanicals. So, you know, when I first started 8 years ago, you know, obviously we're very proud of our culture and our, you know, our flora and fauna, things that grow here that don't grow anywhere else in the world. But I think there was almost too much use of native botanicals, and they're very bold, as you know, and they can really kind of overtake a gin. And I'm seeing kind of, you know, people are still using natives, but in a much more nuanced way. And, you know, you're still able to use local ingredients, so like the oyster shell gin or, you know, Melbourne rooftop honey. You don't have to go for the lemon myrtles or the, you know, the strawberry gum, those kind of flavours.
When distillers enter their gins into competitions, they probably get a bit of feedback from the judges, don't they? So maybe that's the sort of stuff that's kind of sinking in for people.
I don't know. I mean, I judge, you know, quite a lot now. So this year I've done the Australian Distilled Spirits Award. I've done the World Gin Awards. I've actually got a judging session tonight with the World Gin Awards, and I've judged the American Distilling Institute Awards. And I think there is an appreciation for different botanicals, because obviously you're judging things from, you know, South Africa, where they again use lots of native ingredients. So I don't necessarily think that's the feedback in highlighting particular botanicals. I think the feedback that, you know, that they'll get is all about balance and flavour integration. And obviously if you're using something like lemon myrtle, you're using too much, it will dominate and, you know, knock out the other flavours and just won't be as balanced.
Yeah, that's more what I was getting at, is just sort of that, you know, sometimes a little bit goes a long way with
absolutely
some of these botanicals. Well, Caroline, thanks so much for your time, and congratulations on another awesome list that I'll link to from the show notes so that people can go out and get their hands on some of these gins.
Fantastic. Thanks, James.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.